This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Daily news conferences to announce appointments, leaks of appointments to come. Team Obama starts to gel. The Senate, not so much. It may be the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, but there's still plenty to chew on in this week's edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
So let's see. 207 EST. Ken Rudin's probably somewhere on the New Jersey Turnpike. But no fear. Guest junkie Matt Bye of the New York Times Magazine joins us to sort out this week's political news. Joe Biden's seat warmer is named. Long red Virginia morphs to a deeper shade of blue. Big guns on both sides stump for next week's runoff for Georgia's Senate seat. And the counting drip, drip, drips on in Minnesota. Later, we focus on President-elect Obama's cabinet and the White House picks with Lanny Davis, who vetted candidates for Bill Clinton's cabinet. And after that, we want you to nominate your favorite rest stop along America's highways. You can vote early with an email to npr.org. But first, if you have questions about the politics of President-elect Obama's picks or any of the election hangovers, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That email address again is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. You can go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Matt Bye covers politics for the New York Times Magazine and wrote The Argument, Inside the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Happy Thanksgiving, Matt.
Same to you, Neil. Nice to be here. I suspect that if Ken is on the Jersey Turnpike, he's going to be able to weigh in on that rest area question.
I think he may be calling in for the Molly Pitcher rest stop any minute. Joe Biden's successor for his Senate seat has been chosen by outgoing Delaware Governor Ruth Ann Minner. It is not, however, the person who's expected to serve the bulk of that term.
No, but I love this decision. I mean, you know, aides never get the credit they deserve. This is a guy who served in the Senate for how long? You know, decades, right? I mean, these guys run the place. They never get to be the principal. They're never out front. I mean, this is great. It gives a guy who's been Joe Biden's chief aide, a major person in the Senate, a chance to actually serve the term for 2 years. And, of course, it achieves the political objectives of presumably of setting up Senator Biden's son, who's well-qualified in his own right, but probably would have suffered more than he would have gained from the appearance of having been given the job by his father. So I think it works out for everybody.
Bo Biden is the Attorney General of Delaware. However, he's serving currently in Iraq in the National Guard. So Ted Kaufman will be the Democratic senator from Delaware for the next couple of years. Two Senate races still undecided. Minnesota, a recount is underway. Is this ever going to end?
No. This is one of these. It's actually not, because it's one of those races we're growing accustomed to now where no matter who wins, somebody feels cheated. It basically just gets deferred to the next race and they can go settle it again. And so at a certain point, you know, I remember the good old days when election days, it seemed, used to be election day and then it was over. We're not at that point anymore. Now it just drags on somewhere, and Minnesota is where it's going to drag on.
And it seems like Groundhog Day in still November 3rd in Georgia. There's a runoff there between Saxby Chambliss and Democrat Jim Martin. Saxby Chambliss, the incumbent Republican. High profile people on both sides have been campaigning there. John McCain and Mitt Romney for Chambliss on Monday, the day before the runoff election. Sarah Palin is going to be there, and Saxby Chambliss is running this ad.
Our economy is in turmoil. Jobs lost. Pensions in jeopardy. Barack Obama's new taxes would be a disaster. Yet Jim Martin supports them. But that's no surprise. Martin voted for the largest tax increase in Georgia history. Raised the sales tax 32%. Even tried to raise property taxes 150%.
In this election, you have a simple choice. I want to cut your taxes. Jim Martin wants to raise your taxes.
And for Jim Martin, no less than Bill Clinton has rallied for him. Noticeably, no visit yet by the president-elect, though he did produce this radio ad.
This is Barack Obama. I want to thank everybody who turned out and voted for me in November. Together, we can get America moving again. But the elections aren't over. In Georgia, there's a runoff on Tuesday, December 2nd. And I want to urge you to turn out one more time and help elect Jim Martin to the United States Senate.
The ad actually goes on, and so does the election, Matt Bye. This one's going to be decided, though, next Tuesday.
I mean, what a silly system, Neil, honestly. Like, it, in this day and age, it's antiquated enough when you think about it that we have one election day where everybody has to come in the middle of the week in person, wait in line, and cast their vote with all the technology we have.
Now wait. We're going to get a lot of calls from Oregon.
That's okay. Now, wait. Okay. Well, early voting is a way to deal with this. But now we need two election days where everybody has to come back. I mean, the turnout's so unpredictable. Right now, it seems that Chambliss is basically holding the lead he had before. I mean, turnout can really affect this, but he's certainly in a good position. And I understand, Senator, the strategy here with President-elect Obama. I mean, I think, you know, obviously you want him to do the ad. The seat matters to him. He certainly needs to weigh in. He can drive a lot of turnout. But at the same time, he has only so much political capital. He needs it right now. He needs to see him above the fray. I think a visit was probably one step further than they were willing to go.
And so he is unlikely to go down to Georgia in the time remaining to campaign for Jim Martin. Still, a couple of House seats remain to be decided, though. The Democrats did pick up another seat this past week in the state of Virginia, which is astonishing. It's done a 180, the state of Virginia.
It has. I mean, and if you look, it's a little complex. There's a few things going on here, right? There are some significant demographic changes going on that are going on all over the country, the exurban and suburban growth, outsiders, immigrants coming in, outsiders building the tech industry in the northern part of the state that have changed the political shape of it. There is a Democratic brand that's been built over the last decade, starting with Mark Warner and on to Tim Kaine. They've shown a kind of governance that people like. And then you just had this wave, the anti-Bush wave. And this is, you know, of course, a huge catalyst, the economic picture that's driven people. So some of it, you know, the first part, when you talk about demographic change, very lasting, very significant, not just in Virginia, but in other parts of the South and the country. But the last part I talked about, obviously, you know, very, very unique to this election climate. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily reflect such a major shift, but certainly there is a gradual change going on in Virginia and in other states.
Yeah, Virgil Good, a representative district around Charlottesville, normally considered a safe Republican seat. He's the one who just lost by 745 votes, and he's getting a recount. So this may go on until the next year as well. There's a couple of others still undecided, one in California, one in Ohio. Well, we'll get Ken Rudin in on those when he gets back.
You'll have plenty of time, I think.
We do want to get some calls in on the picks that have been announced by President-elect Obama. But, you know, in some ways, the most interesting vote certainly of this week, it's going to be tomorrow in the Iraqi parliament when they vote on the status of forces agreement. We forget that Iraq was such a huge part of this election and the major issue early on.
We do forget. And that's going to make it, I think, a little bit easier for a President Obama to navigate this issue, because so much focus now in the economy and domestic issues, he can finesse where he wanted to go on Iraq, right? He can moderate his view, maybe the timetable that he had in mind. And at the same time, I think there's, you know, seems to be an emerging general consensus for a gradual withdrawal. So I think that's posing less of a challenge to him as a result of the political climate than certainly we would have thought it would have 6 months or 8 months out of Election Day.
We're going to be talking about the picks for the cabinet and the White House, the process by which those picks are made, and the politics of this. So if you'd like to weigh in on that, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're talking right now with Matt Bai, who's our guest political junkie. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Lanny Davis, who was a special counsel to President Clinton and helped vet many of his cabinet appointments. So give us a call if you'd like to weigh in on that. Let's go with Kevin. Kevin's joining us on the line from St. Augustine in Florida.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I'm wondering, for your opinion, what does picking a formal Federal Reserve governor to head the Treasury and now Paul Volcker to head the Economic Advisory Committee have to do with all these promises of real change? I mean, these are the guys who are the architects of the trouble we're in, and Obama talks about reading Lincoln, but Lincoln despised the central banks as much as the founding fathers.
Change, Obama certainly campaigned on that. Change we can believe in, and we have seen a lot of Washington retreads, Matt Bai, come out, including, Larry Summers, and as Kevin is mentioning, the next Secretary of the Treasury, the former Fed Chairman, Paul Volcker, yeah, announced today, and it looks like Robert Gates is going to be continuing on at the Defense Department.
Well, there is certainly a storyline taking shape that Barack Obama talked more about change than his appointments would reflect. I mean, in some ways, I think that's unfair because, I mean, change doesn't mean you bring in a bunch of people who've never worked in government, right? There has to be some continuity in the past. I think what's actually happening, if you look at least from my point of view, is a little more complex in that, and there's a theory behind it that I find interesting, which is I think if you look at it, a lot of the people who were around him who were the architects of the change model, that sort of insurgency that he ran, are being installed with him in the White House, in the executive branch. And then in the cabinet picks, in the picks as you radiate out in Washington, they've obviously gone with a lot of people who have experience in the Clinton era and in the Congress. I think what that says is not so much that they've just thrown the rhetoric away and are bringing in retreads, as you say. I think what it indicates is that Barack Obama thinks that most public servants, most principals, can sort of go either way. They can either be tools of an establishment, they can govern the same old way, or they can be change agents, depending on the kind of leadership and the marching orders that they get. And that he and his team, if they embody real change, if they're true to the rhetoric of their campaign, then the Tom Daschles and Paul Volckers of the world, or the Hillary Clintons, or whoever, all the people who have been in the Democrat establishment for a long time, can actually be the agents of that change because they know how to pull the levers of government. I think that's a more complex theory than he's generally getting credit for.
Your book, The Argument, is about the rise of the so-called net roots that played such an important part in the revival of the Democratic Party and so much an important part in Barack Obama's victory, not only in the primaries but in the general election. Are some of those people getting nervous?
Oh, they're more than nervous. They're furious. They're furious. And I think they really did. A lot of folks in the so-called net roots really did think that this was going to be the moment for everyone who'd never been in Washington to come, you know, quote-unquote, crash the gates. But look, in a sense, you know, there's a message being sent here. I don't know that it's being sent purposely. Obama supplanted those people. I mean, the bloggers and the MoveOn folks, I mean, they built the apparatus here. They engaged a lot of people online. They came to amass a certain amount of power and capital. But the Obama movement is much bigger than them. It's bigger in terms of names, what he's got, upwards of 10 million emails. It's bigger in terms of money. I mean, what he raised dwarfs what anyone else has been able to do. And there's a challenge in translating that to a governing model. But still, at the end of the day, the online progressive movement is his more than it belongs to any bloggers or any organization. And he intends, obviously, to you know, follow his own instincts in that space and not to bend, and it's going to disappoint some people.
Nevertheless, those people can bounce back at you once the bloom is off the rose.
They can make noise, but, you know, his political capital is his to either use or waste, and as long as he uses it wisely, I think the damage they can do him is pretty minimal.
Kevin, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. We'll talk more with Matt Bai in a moment, our guest political junkie, and when we come back, Lanny Davis on what may be the toughest job in Washington, vetting the new Obama team. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
To be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For the third time in as many days, President-elect Obama held a news conference. He named former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker to head a new Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Peter Orszag, the current director of the Congressional Budget Office, was tabbed to head the White House Office of Management and Budget. More personnel announcements are due next week. And behind all these nominees is an intense vetting process. More about that in a moment. Our guest political junkie this week is Matt Bai of the New York Times Magazine. And we have a caller on the line. This is Ken. Ken calling us from the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yes. First of all, I understand that Ken Rudin is not on the show today.
That's right. Ken Rudin is traveling to be with the bosom of his family.
Oh, because I have a great trivia question. The last New York senator named Secretary of State.
The last New York senator to be named Secretary of State. Who would that be, Ken?
That would be John Foster Dulles, 1949.
He worked in the Senate.
Yes, he was. Before he was Secretary of State, he was New York Senator, named by Thomas, Governor Thomas Dewey.
And Ken, are you in one of those fabulous rest stops in the New Jersey Turnpike?
I'm on the Jersey Turnpike, and who's this Matt Bai guy?
Look, we have one important vetting question for all of our guest political junkies. Are they Yankee fans? So, you know, he passed that one, and so, Ken, we'll see you again next week.
See you guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye, Ken. Let's introduce Washington lawyer Lanny Davis, who was in charge of vetting candidates for Bill Clinton's cabinet. He's been kind enough to join us here at Studio 3A and to put up with this nonsense. Lanny, good to have you back on the program.
I am a New York Giants fan before they went to San Francisco, and I hated the Yankees. So.
Well, that's why you're the guest, not the guest junkie. let's talk about the politics of these appointments for just a minute, picking up on what Matt was talking about just before the break. A lot of people are going to say, boy, these are a lot of old familiar faces.
Well, first of all, the simple answer to that, and I think Matt suggested it, is that change is about policy change. It's not about people change. If Barack Obama changes policies and people who are veterans of prior administrations are the agents of that change, it's a silly argument to me. Barack Obama still has the same agenda. We get national health insurance. Hillary Clinton is the agent of change on national health insurance, and she would have been had she been president. He's going to set the agenda for change, and that's the only thing that matters. And regarding these so-called net roots, Barry Goldwater had, before the internet, his right-wing base that
was before electricity, I think,
to take over the Republican Party. George McGovern had what was the version of Netroots before there was a net. Every political party has an ideological core that I call purist, intolerant, dogmatic, and ultimately hates the person they started out supporting when they slightly compromise. So Barack Obama having the backbone to stand up to some of the more intolerant strands of what Matt has written about is good for Barack Obama and good for the Democratic Party and good for the country.
Well, let me ask you, one of the benefits of having some of these familiar places come in is, they've already been vetted. This is a horrible process.
Look, my vetting experience was quite unusual because I had a couple of explosions occur that were completely unanticipated. Most vetting is pretty standard. You get tax returns. You ask a bunch of questions from a questionnaire, and then you go with a gut instinct to tell whoever the president-elect is, this is what you might be worried about if there are confirmation hearings. In my case, I started out with somebody named Zoe Baird, who's a great lady from Connecticut who was being looked at for either White House counsel or for attorney general. It turned out that she and about 10 million other people hadn't been careful about paying Social Security for a nanny. And that began the whole
nanny
issue.
Gate, yes.
And she took a very unfair heat on that issue. But we discovered that in the course of vetting. And it wasn't quite appreciated as the explosive issue that it became, because at one point she was looked at for White House counsel where there weren't going to be confirmation hearings. Then I went on to do vetting for Janet Reno and for Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, and there was less controversy about those two.
And Governor Bill Richardson coming back, apparently, as Secretary of Commerce. So this is going to be pretty interesting. Matt?
Well, boy, I just want to say, I don't want to relitigate the past, Lanny, but speaking for the millions of Americans who labor to pay our taxes properly for our domestic help, I think you may have written off the significance of that issue just a little bit.
Well, I don't write off the significance because I was right in the middle of it and it was quite significant. But at the time, there were millions and millions of people who didn't realize that domestic help required and that turned out to be there were so many people who shared that problem that we then found a whole bunch of people who had to take themselves out of the running when they discovered
right,
they were
right.
doing the same thing. I'm just not passing judgment on Zoe, who's a great person, but she got caught up in something that retroactively you could say probably she should have known.
Well, certainly
but wasn't
knew
at the time.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Is it fair to say, though, one way or another, somebody whose name we're going to hear either this week or in the weeks to come is going to blow up in their face?
Look, this is the moment of, if I could brag about my own book, of gotcha politics. I wrote a book which was really the history of scandal in American politics, but the subhead is how gotcha politics is destroying America. So what's going to happen is the Republicans are going to pick out one or two or three. They can't go for more than that. To try to play gotcha, to find something in that individual's background that they can try to blow up, use talk radio and a lot of other people on the pundit land to blow up into an issue and cause Barack Obama to be set back. It won't work this time, I think, because there's nothing that is likely to show up. And secondly, people are fed up with this. And this time with Barack Obama as president, I think he's created a culture of less tolerance for gotcha politics.
Well, let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's start with Peter. Peter calling us from Oakland, California.
Well, you know, I called to just offer an opinion on the appointments, but I have to challenge the thing that the gentleman involved in the vetting process just said. I think it's, you know, it seems a gross generalization to say that everybody who critiques candidates or for some of these cabinet positions is somehow, you know, rigidly ideological or intolerant. I mean, that just seems very condescending to much of the American public. But in any event, I think, you know, an awful lot of folks, whether they're involved with the net roots or not, really voted for change in American foreign policy. And I think right now they have every reason to feel like, you know, kind of Charlie Brown at the football, you know, having had it yanked away. Robert Gates emerging as the defense secretary is very disappointing. Just a month ago, he gave a speech in favor of a new generation of nuclear weapons. That's, you know, the exact opposite of Obama's platform. You know, obviously, Obama and Hillary famously feuded on some approaches to different countries around the world, and I think people voted in the primaries for a different approach, and they have to feel a little bit of reservation about what they're getting now, and ditto for General Jones, who, you know, actually campaigned for McCain. So right now, we have every reason to feel disappointed, and I think Americans should pay very close attention to these types of appointments because they ultimately have a huge influence on policy. I think it's very unrealistic to say that it all flows from the White House and that the lead policymakers have no influence.
I'm not sure you're right about General Jones campaigning for Senator McCain, but in any case, Lanny Davis.
Well, first of all, to respond, you must have been listening to somebody other than me, or there may be something in your headphones, because I didn't say anything about criticizing the Netroots for what they may bring up on people who are nominating. I was talking about every political movement, whether it's the Netroots or the Barry Goldwaterites or the McGovernites, have an ideological wing where when the candidate heads to the center and actually gets elected, they get unhappy, as I hear you might be about some of the decisions by President-elect Obama. To me, he is governing from the center where the American people live, and he also has to be faithful to his base, which is where I happen to be. I'm a liberal Democrat, and I want him to be faithful to his policy commitments, but I want him to govern from the center, which means we could reach across the aisle and compromise. Compromise is going to make a certain number of people in his base unhappy. That's important that he be willing to do that, because he can't avoid doing that if he's going to govern from the center.
And Matt Bayh, let's go back on this status of forces agreement negotiated by the Bush administration. It does call for a withdrawal of American forces from Iraq by 2011. It doesn't say they have to wait until 2011 to withdraw.
Right. Like I said before, I think there's a general consensus emerging around this, and it does seem, at least from the reports I've read, that Secretary Gates is not a long-term appointment. It's probably just
about
some continuity,
year, yeah.
Probably about a year. And I think that's grossly unfair, actually, to Jim Jones, who I spoke to for one of my pieces during the campaign. It's actually quite different. He's a close friend of John McCain, who actually advised Barack Obama during the campaign, which took no small amount of conviction on his part. But, you know, I actually think you could level questions at Obama from the other side here. I mean, not to further irritate the caller, but he talked about a bipartisan administration. There was actually a great deal of intimation, I wrote about it, about putting not more than one Republican and at a senior level in the administration. We've not seen that. Republicans don't think that Gates is even a Republican. I don't know that we know that. We have no, I don't know, Paul Volcker may be registered as a Republican, but you really have actually no bona fide Republicans in any senior role in the cabinet. And it looks like with everything filling up as fast as it is, maybe transportation secretary, one of the traditional departments that gets tossed over to the other party, but it doesn't look any different in character in terms of partisanship as what we saw from President Bush or President Clinton. So,
well, maybe except for chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, Joe Lieberman.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, that he has he had a little control over. But yeah, but in general, there's not, I'm not seeing him actually make good on the notion of a bipartisan administration and cabinet nearly to the extent that I expected.
I actually had some hopes that when he met with John McCain, he would surprise everyone and name John McCain director of the CIA or something that might have allowed John McCain to say yes. You know, the team of rivals that he refers to often by Doris Kearns Goodwin, which I just wrote about in a column last week, is not just about putting together rivals from the Republican 1960 nomination, which he did with Seward and Chase and Gates. He also reached out and picked Democrats who had supported his opponent to be in the cabinet, Montgomery Blair, Gideon Welles. So they
became among his biggest supporters.
Yes, there really was a Lincoln bipartisan cabinet. And so far, I think Matt's exactly right. But how does Barack Obama do that without putting somebody in the cabinet that disagrees with him on fundamental issues? Maybe I was looking for Chuck Hagel to be Secretary of Defense to replace Gates. That would probably be
Well, a lot of Republicans wonder whether he's a Republican, too.
Exactly. So.
Well, and by the time you replace Gates, I think the statement that you would have made is significantly more reduced. I mean, the time to do that was now, presumably.
There are still some important appointments left in the national security side in terms of the intelligence czar and the Central Intelligence Agency, so that remains to be seen. But he seems to be picking technocrats rather than ideologues, for the most part, from both parties.
Well, and I think he's run up against a reality wall. There are things you can do and things that you can't. We've talked about how he's angering some of his base, and that is, as Lanny says, I think he's right, it's inevitable. But I think when they really sat down and looked at the cabinet, they could have quashed this idea earlier, and I think they had ideas about it. And then when they sat down and really looked at who was out there and what to do, what are you going to give away to a party at a time of such intense partisanship? State? Defense, you know, they could, but they want the continuity. You know, is it's certainly not going to be justice where they've had all these intense differences in philosophy. I mean, I think the differences with the outgoing administration are so severe that the reality was there was no good way to make that bipartisan statement without, you know, significantly sacrificing their core beliefs.
So Lanny Davis is the Veterans Administration or the Department of Transportation, though energy could be a big one still left. There aren't the great plums left.
Right. And it's interesting to me, the names that are being floated are still major Democratic names. Look, one thing we have to say, and I don't know whether I'm right about this, Matt, but in my long lifetime in this city and in politics, I can never remember a transition this quickly in place with people literally looking as if they're running the government. I mean, Barack Obama with his economic team looks a lot like to me that he's president of the United States with people starting to make policy. So with John Podesta, and there's a choice of a Clinton chief of staff, very loyal person to the Clintons, who literally is the best there is. And Barack Obama discounted what he knew would be complaints, and there were a lot from his campaign when he picked Podesta. He picked the very best there is, and we're at Thanksgiving, and look how much has already occurred. Looking back to the Bill Clinton years in 1991 at this time, we weren't nearly this far. So I think Obama has done great in the middle of this economic crisis to do as quickly as he's done, as well as he's done.
Washington lawyer Lanny Davis, guest political junkie Matt Baugh. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go now to Troy. Troy with us from Iowa City. Hello, Troy.
His phone must have frozen. You know?
Yeah, it might have. Thanks very much for the call, Troy. We'll move on instead to Sean. Sean with us from San Francisco.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my phone call. I have kind of a comment and a question, two of them. One is regarding, both of them regarding Hillary Clinton. I don't see her as an honest broker, despite the fact that I understand the earlier comments regarding Obama's vision. But she doesn't seem to me to be an honest broker. She's been consistently on the Israeli side regarding the Israeli-Palestinian issue. And secondly, during her campaign, she threatened to obliterate Iran despite the fact that Israel is the one that always threatened Iran with attack on their nuclear facilities. I would like to hear the comment on that.
Hillary Clinton did have that dramatic ad, "Who do you want answering the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning?" Well, it's going to be Barack Obama answering the phone, but he may make the next call to the State Department and Hillary Clinton, Lanny Davis.
Look, to his great credit, first of all, the caller's obviously got a perfectly understandable perspective. He seems to be anti-Israel, and that's fine. There are many people who don't like the state of Israel, but I can't think
or
of
its policies. But.
Or its policies. I can't, and that's fine, but I can't think of a government or secretary of state in my lifetime that wasn't very much pro-Israel. But on the other hand, we have to have peace, and the person has to be credible with the Palestinians. The two-state solution has long ago been accepted under, to his credit, President Bush and the government of Israel. So I think Secretary of State Clinton, boy, does that sound funny, will be a partner to the president and implement the president's policies. He's the president. And I think she has great credibility because of her stature to reach out and to deal with the Palestinians and to try to help with a peace settlement that's fair to both sides.
Sean, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Matt, before we let you go, a little business left to clean up in the Senate, and that includes new appointments in Illinois and New York. And yeah, those are pretty plum appointments. We've even heard the name of Bill Clinton in the paper this morning as maybe junior senator from the state of New York.
I think Bill Clinton's name comes up with just about everything except, you know, baseball commissioner or what have you.
I mean, I've heard that too.
every job open in America, somebody sees Bill Clinton. And I have a hard time seeing that. I mean, John Quincy Adams went back to Congress, right, and snoozed away in the House floor. But I suspect...
Hey, that's not quite fair.
But he'd had a pretty terrible presidency. I suspect that, you know...
Became a leading abolitionist, and speaking of William Seward, his
true,
great sponsor.
And had a very famous legal case. So he did a lot in his older age, but I don't mean to be unfair to all the Quincy Adamses out there, but I suspect that Bill Clinton would rather, you know, put his head through a cement wall than have to deal with the Senate for one day. I do think it's kind of cool, though, that we are seeing all this turnover. It's one of the unintendeds or the ripple consequences of this that we're going to see when all the dust settles. And it's because it's not just because we've had two senators elected. It's also because the margins are such that we haven't had a period in a long time where presidents felt relatively free to pick from the Senate. or the House because it wasn't going to shift the balance significantly. Even then, there's still a little, you know, it's still not filibuster-proof, but it's enough so that, you know, we'll see some appointments like Hillary Clinton. And so we will have a bunch of, you know, fresh faces from states where people stay entrenched normally for decades, which is pretty cool.
Matt Bai, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to do it, Neil.
Guest political junkie Matt Bai, who writes for the New York Times Magazine. His book is called The Argument. And our thanks, too, to Lanny Davis, a special counsel to President Clinton, in charge of vetting Clinton's cabinet choices, a Washington lawyer and political analyst with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks
very
much for
your
time,
Neil.
Lanny. Up next, with so many of you hitting the road today, tell us about your favorite rest stop in America. Got a favorite rest stop story or horror story, maybe? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. If you saw somebody logging into Politico, yeah, that was Ken Rudin in New Jersey. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.